So, you know how in law school, you start thinking about like how the stuff you're learning actually plays out in the real world, right?
Definitely.
And one of the big ones that comes up is where's the line
Right.
between law enforcement doing their job effectively, catching criminals, but also not going too far and violating people's individual rights?
Huge. Yeah, a huge issue.
So today we're diving deep into a Supreme Court case that kind of really set a major boundary there.
Okay.
It's called Sorrells v. United States back in 1932.
1932.
And this one's super important for all you future lawyers out there listening because it established the whole idea of the entrapment defense,
Right.
like a core limit on how the government can actually get those convictions.
Definitely foundational.
So we're going to break down exactly what went down in this case. What was the legal question the Supreme Court was wrestling with? How did the different justices see it? And why does Sorrells still matter so much today when we talk about the balance of power in our whole justice system?
Right.
So think of this as like your crash course in
Okay.
understanding this super important concept.
I like it.
All right, so let's jump in.
Let's do it.
So this case really shows how like very specific facts can lead to like these big, huge legal principles.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's interesting is how this whole thing started. It was kind of personal.
Right.
Back in the summer of 1930, we've got this prohibition agent named Martin.
Okay.
And he goes to find this guy, C.V. Sorrells, at his home in North Carolina.
All right.
But this wasn't like an official visit or anything. Martin was undercover.
Okay, so sneaky right from the start.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's pretending to be like a furniture dealer from Charlotte.
Ah, I see.
But maybe even more important, he says he's a fellow World War I veteran
Oh, wow.
and even suggests they might have served in the same division.
So creating that kind of instant bond, right?
Yeah,
Like,
got
hey, we were brothers in arms kind of thing.
Yep. So you can already see the strategy here.
Yeah.
Martin's not just asking some random person on the street for illegal booze.
He's trying to build a connection, however fake it is, right?
Totally. And over the next hour and a half, he keeps asking Sorrells to get him some liquor.
Oh, wow. So it's not just like a one-time ask.
No, it's like this constant pressure, you know. Come on, buddy, hook me up.
Yeah, I can see how using that shared military background would be super persuasive.
Totally. It's like this deep personal thing, right?
Right.
Often comes with a sense of camaraderie.
For sure.
Like you got to help out your fellow veteran. So
Exactly.
initially, Sorrells is like, nah, man, I'm good.
So he's not immediately jumping at the chance.
Nope. But Martin just keeps pushing it.
Really leaning into that fake shared experience.
Oh, yeah. And eventually, after all that pressure,
What happens?
Sorrells gives in.
Oh no.
He goes off and comes back with a half gallon of whiskey.
Wow.
Sells to Martin for $5.
Fact box. And guess what?
He gets busted.
Right away arrested for violating the National Prohibition Act.
It's like a classic setup.
It is. The government agent starts the whole thing, creates this fake bond, keeps pushing until the guy who was initially resistant finally does it. So what happens next? I mean, Sorrells is facing charges now, right?
Yep. What's his defense?
Yeah, how do they fight this?
So at the trial, it's interesting. Sorrells himself doesn't actually testify.
Okay.
His lawyers focused on showing what kind of guy he was, his character.
I see, trying to paint him in a good light.
Exactly. They bring in people from the community who say he's got a good reputation.
Okay.
Point out that he's had a steady job at a factory since 1924.
So, like, he's a solid citizen, right?
Right, a law-abiding guy.
Makes sense.
But the prosecution, they hit back.
How
They
so?
bring in their own evidence, suggesting Sorrells actually had a reputation for being a rum runner.
Oh, wow. So now they're saying he's already involved in this stuff.
Yeah, and get this, the court even let them bring up another liquor sale from Sorrells to Martin
Yeah.
that happened like 6 weeks after that first encounter.
Oh, so they're trying to show a pattern.
Yeah, exactly.
But bringing in stuff that happened later that feels like it could make things messy.
It does. And the biggest issue here is that the trial judge wouldn't even let the jury think about whether Sorrells had been entrapped.
What do you mean?
He basically said, even if all this was true, it's not a legal defense.
Wow, so the jury couldn't even consider it.
Nope.
So what happened?
Sorrells gets convicted, and then the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals upholds that conviction.
Oh, wow.
But then the Supreme Court decides to hear the case.
Okay.
And they specifically wanted to answer this question. Should entrapment have been something the jury got to think about?
Ah, so now we're getting to the heart of the matter.
Exactly. Like, how much power should the government have to basically create a crime?
Right.
So the case goes to the Supreme Court. What's the big legal question they're trying to answer?
Yeah, what's the core issue here?
The main issue was whether What the government did in this specific case, you know, Agent Martin constantly asking Sorrels for booze and making up that whole military connection, whether all that amounted to entrapment. And if it did, should that prevent someone from being convicted if they weren't already likely to commit that crime?
So they had to decide, did the government go too far in tricking him into doing something illegal?
Right.
So what did the Supreme Court decide?
So they all agreed that what happened did raise a question of entrapment.
Unanimously.
Yep. And that the trial court messed up by not letting the jury consider it.
So the jury should have been able to weigh in on that.
Exactly. And this is where Chief Justice Hughes, in his majority opinion, lays down the subjective test for entrapment.
Okay, hold on. Subjective test, that's a key term here.
It is? Can you explain what that means?
So basically the subjective test, it's all about the defendant's mindset.
Okay.
Like, were they already inclined to commit this crime before the cops even got involved?
Gotcha. So if entrapment's on the table, the prosecution has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was predisposed.
Meaning?
Meaning ready and willing to commit the crime.
Okay.
Even without the government pushing them. And Chief Justice Hughes argued that in Sorrell's case, the whole plan to do the crime started with Agent Martin.
Not Sorrell's.
Right. And they pointed out that Sorrell's had no criminal record for anything like this.
So no history of bootlegging or anything.
Exactly. And that the agent basically planted the idea in his head by making up that personal connection.
So it's like, was the defendant an innocent person who got tricked? Or were they already a criminal just waiting for the chance?
That's it.
So was Sorrells actually looking to sell liquor and the government just made it easy? Or did they basically turn him into a criminal?
That's the core question.
Gotcha.
The majority also looked at how to interpret the National Prohibition Act itself.
Okay.
And they said that Congress probably didn't mean for it to be used to punish people who were basically tricked into breaking the law.
That makes sense.
Like it would be twisting the law's purpose.
Right. It's not just about the letter of the law, but also the intention behind it.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned there was a concurring opinion too, right?
Yeah. Justice Roberts, what was his take on all this?
Yeah. Did he agree with the majority?
So Justice Roberts, along with Justices Brandeis and Stone, they agreed with the outcome, you know, reversing Sorrell's conviction.
Okay.
But they wanted a totally different way of dealing with entrapment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they thought the court should use what's called the objective test.
Objective test. All right, so how's that different from the subjective test?
So the objective test forgets about whether the defendant was predisposed or not.
It does.
It looks only at what the police did.
Oh, okay.
Justice Roberts said courts should be able to just throw out charges if the government's tactics are, like, way out of line, you know?
Outrageous, reprehensible, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Even if the defendant might have been planning to commit the crime anyway.
Interesting. So it's about keeping the justice system clean.
Right. And stopping the government from doing shady stuff.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So even if Sorrells had a history of selling booze, if what Agent Martin did was too much like all the pressure, the fake war story, then the entrapment defense could still work.
Exactly. That's the big difference. And Roberts specifically said he didn't like the subjective approach.
Why not?
He thought making it all about the defendant's past takes the focus away from what the government did wrong.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He believed the courts should be able to step in when the cops cross the line.
Regardless of who the defendant is.
Exactly. It's a really different way of thinking about the court's role in keeping the police in check.
For sure.
Oh, and we should mention Justice McReynolds. He dissented, but he didn't write an opinion.
So he just thought the lower court got it right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got these different opinions, especially the majority's view, and from that, we get this framework for the entrapment defense.
Right.
Can you break down like the two main parts of this defense under the subjective test?
Okay, so first there has to be government inducement.
Meaning?
Meaning the government has to actually push the person to commit the crime.
Right, it's not enough to just give someone the chance to do something illegal.
Exactly. It's got to be more than that.
Like what?
Like actively encouraging them, constantly asking them to do it. Lying to them, threatening them, or like we saw in Sorrells, using their personal weaknesses against them.
So Agent Martin bugging Sorrells for over an hour, plus making up that whole war story, those are good examples of inducement.
Definitely.
Okay, so the government has to be the one really pushing for the crime.
Right.
What's the second part?
The second part is lack of predisposition.
Meaning?
Meaning the defendant wasn't already planning on committing this type of crime before the government got involved.
Okay, so it's looking at their state of mind. Were they already thinking about doing this?
Exactly. Like in Sorrell's case, his clean record and that steady job for years, Those suggest he wasn't some shady bootlegger just waiting for a customer.
Interesting. So it's a two-part thing. Did the government push them, and were they already inclined to do it anyway?
Exactly.
So who has to prove entrapment in court?
So once the defendant says, hey, I was entrapped, then it's on the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was actually predisposed.
So the defendant doesn't have to prove they were entrapped. The prosecution has to prove they weren't.
That's a key point.
That is important.
So this case, it really changed American law.
Yeah, how so?
It officially made entrapment a recognized offense in federal cases.
Wow.
It's a major protection against the government overstepping its bounds.
Big time.
It also started this ongoing debate about how to approach entrapment. You know, should we focus on the defendant's mindset or on what the police did?
Right. The subjective versus objective test debate.
Exactly. And even though the subjective test is what's used in federal court, Justice Roberts' arguments in his concurring opinion, they've had a big impact.
Yeah, like where?
Some states use the objective test, and legal scholars still talk about which approach is better.
So Sorrells is still relevant today.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it wasn't just a one-off decision either.
What do you mean?
Sorrells laid the groundwork for later Supreme Court cases about entrapment.
Okay.
Like Sherman v. United States in 1958,
uh-huh,
and Jacobson v. United States in 1992. Those cases built on the principles from Sorrells and looked at how entrapment works in different situations.
So for law students out there listening, this isn't just some old case.
Nope.
It's about understanding something fundamental about how criminal investigations work.
Exactly.
And the limits of government power.
So the big takeaway for everyone listening is that Sorrells set a limit on what the government can do to trick someone into committing a crime.
Right.
It protects regular people who would probably never break the law from being turned into criminals by overzealous cops.
Basically manufacturing crime.
Exactly. And it makes us look beyond just whether a crime happened and consider the circumstances.
Like, how did it happen?
Yeah. And was the government involved in making it happen?
That raises some tough questions for lawyers.
It does.
Like, what kind of evidence proves someone was predisposed or not?
Right.
And how can defense attorneys argue that the government went too far?
Great questions. And it makes you think about how entrapment applies to law enforcement today.
Especially with all the new technology and stuff.
Totally. Like what Justice Roberts was worried about.
Right.
Is it dangerous to just focus on the person's past instead of really looking at how the government investigates cases?
It's something to think about for sure as you continue learning about the law.
Definitely.
And the whole area of entrapment law, it's still developing.
It is.
There are tons of cases and articles out there that build on what Sorrells started.
Exactly.
I definitely encourage everyone to check those out.
Yeah, great advice.
To get a deeper understanding of this super important part of the law.
Absolutely. Thanks for breaking it all down for us.
My pleasure.
And to everyone listening, keep those legal brains churning.
And we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.